Dave from New Jersey. It's the SNL Nerds, a show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
Hello, Darren Patterson. How are you, sir?
I'm doing okay, doing all right. We're in the midst of September. It's that crazy month where it's still kind of warm because it's, you know, kind of half summer, but it's going into fall, so it's getting kind of cool. It's like it's like the state of Virginia, where it's like it's kind of the north, but it's also kind of the south. It's a transitional month.
I think. You're deep, Darren.
I think you're really deep. That's what I keep telling people.
Yeah.
I keep telling people, hey guys, I'm super deep and complicated and complex. And then and everybody's like, sir, this is a Wendy's. What are you doing?
Uh-huh.
No one asks for your opinions.
Yeah. I'm going to get t-shirts made up to that effect. Like I'm super deep and complex.
Thank you.
And maybe just a nice picture of me underneath.
With like your a fist under your chin, giving that little pose.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I'm wearing a jacket with elbow patches, so nice. I look intellectual.
Staring off into this. Yeah, you can do like About the Author type of picture where you're like leaning against an oak tree, just staring off in the distance.
And I'm holding a pipe.
Nice.
I don't smoke at all, but you know, you hold a pipe, you immediately look more intellectual.
It commands respect.
It really does, especially when combined with the elbow patches.
Yes. I think my picture, I'm going to go retro and do the, grade school 80s graduation pic, where it's like me in a sweater vest, some lasers in the background behind me.
Right. Yeah. You know, we loved the laser backgrounds in the 1980s. It was
pew, pew, pew.
Yeah, it was nuts. What do they do now? Do they just do like sort of a more neutral background? I don't have kids who are getting school pictures, so I don't know this.
I don't know. Part of me wants to hope that they still do like the laser background or that graph paper grid background or something with unicorns. Yeah. But like, I don't think they do. I think it's just a straight up plain Jane background, which is that's the real shame. That's
a real tragedy.
That's why our country's going to Hades in a handbasket.
That and no other reason.
Nope, yes. That's it. That's the only reason I could think of.
So, we had a little more news break in the world of SNL. I think we thought that all the casting had been settled. It was like, oh, okay, well, these people are confirmed as leaving. These five new people are confirmed to be coming in. Lots of other people were confirmed to be returning. We're like, okay, great. We're all settled with the cast. And then yesterday, as we record this, it was on Friday, this news broke, and you were like the person I learned the news from. You posted about it.
That's
you
weird.
Think piece about it.
Yeah. Like, that's weird. Cause a friend of mine texted me about it when, how was that work? Cause I didn't even know. Cause like, you know, many people in my circle know I'm like the SNL guy. And, but it was the same thing. Like on Monday, like SNL announced that like, all right, the shakeup is over. We've no more hiring or firing. All the old cast members are coming back. This is it. This is done. Mikey's coming back. Bowen's coming back. Sherman's coming back. And that's it. Done and done.
Right.
Everything's smooth sailing from here on out. Ain't nothing bad going to happen today, do we? So then...
I'm cutting half really bad, do we? Don't sleep on Walk Hard, people. Watch that movie. It is such a great movie.
Underrated gem.
Underrated gem. About a fake musician, which we're going to talk about later on today. We're getting to Spinal Tap, promise.
Yeah, huh.
But we got to talk about this. Yeah, so
you
go ahead, Darren.
Yeah, yeah. And then a friend of mine just texted me. And it's like, yo, Ego's leaving the show. I was like, huh?
Yeah.
And I sure enough, Ego Wodum officially is leaving Saturday Night Live. She put on her Instagram this message saying, "The hardest part of a great party is knowing when to say goodnight. But after seven unforgettable seasons, I have decided to leave SNL. I am immensely grateful to Lauren for the opportunity, to my castmates, the writers, and the crew for their brilliant support and friendship. Week after week on that stage taught me more than I could have ever imagined, and I will carry those memories and the laughter with me always. Now invite me to your weddings, please."
Is that just for everyone or just for the people who work at SNL? Probably just the people who work at SNL.
Right? Yes. Yeah. I think so. I hate to, or maybe you should just.
Because, like, Ego, if I ever do get married, I'm fucking inviting you to my wedding.
That's right. You better show up.
The offer's out there. Yeah.
Yep. And, this kind of came as a shock to everybody. You know, Cecily Strong left a message, Punky, Chloe, who else? Yvonne Orji, Anna Gosteyer, Michelle Buteau, Jane Wickline, Bobby Moynihan, Sierra Sullivan, Melissa Villaseñor, Rosebud Baker, they all left messages.
Lots of people.
Lots of people. Yeah, because this one actually kind of surprised me, because like I just thought she would come back, I mean, especially since SNL said, all right, we're done. So and now, not so much.
This was my experience. Okay, so I think I logged onto Facebook yesterday, and I was running around a lot yesterday, so I wasn't home a lot. I wasn't like really looking at my phone. I wasn't on my computer. I didn't have a whole lot of screen time yesterday.
Okay.
So I come back home for like an hour between seeing one movie and going out to another movie at another theater. Right. And you had posted like some think piece, and I forget where it was, but it was pointing out like, hey, you know, is SNL really starting season 51 without any black female cast members? And I immediately thought, well, no, because Ego's still in the cast. It didn't even occur to me that she might leave.
Because
I was like, oh, the cast is locked in. And I actually typed up and posted a comment to that effect. And then, like a second after I did that, I was like, I should probably, you know, follow this link and read this article first. So I don't sound like a total idiot in case there's something I don't know about. And then I followed that. Yeah. And of course, that's how I learned about Ego leaving.
It's so a shocker. Like,
okay. Wow. I did not know that. I missed that. This isn't that old, but.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was definitely surprising. Yeah. That article I posted up, I think it was basically talking about how in that 50-year history of SNL, they've only had eight black women.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was a Hollywood Reporter. Is that right?
I think it might have been Variety.
Yeah. It was one of those two.
Yeah. I think they said it was Yvonne Hudson. Denitra Vance, right. Ellen Cleghorn, Maya Rudolph, Shasheer Zameda, Leslie Jones, Ego, did I miss somebody? All right, I'll look it up. But
I mean, are we counting Keenan as a wig as Star Jones?
No,
probably not. Right? Yeah. So
we're not doing that. But it's been pretty low for. Black women, like now this is, and now their cast is all white women, you know, Oops All Snow Bunnies on SNL.
Oops All Snow Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, it is surprising because like I don't know, because I mean she just came off like a pretty strong year with her Miss Eggy character that went viral, you know, after she got the audience to say shit.
Well, look, no, that wasn't her goal.
It wasn't her goal, but it
that happened. Was like the accidental result. I mean, yes. It was, we talked about this when it happened, but yeah, she was like, because Eggy ain't, you know, and yeah, the audience naturally goes, shit. that's a phrase.
I mean,
what response she wanted or she was going for there, I don't know. But anyway.
Yeah. Oh, Punky Johnson. That's the other last one. I forgot. Sorry.
We don't need to do Punky Johnson, especially since she's a very recent cast member.
Yeah. Well, got that. And, you know, of course. Like all her other cast, all her other characters, you know, Lisa from Temecula, Dionne Warwick, like she's actually like a favorite on, like a lot of people love her, and it's to see her. I mean, but then again,
I know also she and Heidi are really close, so I wonder if Heidi leaving the show plays into Ego deciding to leave, because it does sound like her decision. So,
I was wondering that too, because like the two Heidi and Ego are like super tight, they're like.
Peas in a pod, those two are. Yeah.
Yes, they're like Aykroyd and Belushi. So, like, the fact, and like, as we've seen in the past, whenever two cast members do get very close like that, whenever one cast member decides to leave, it's usually not too long before the other one leaves, kind of too.
The other one is not far behind, like Beck and Kyle, Aykroyd and Belushi,
Adi and Kate, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, usually that's how it goes. So her leaving, it bummed me out a bit because it does leave SNL, the cast, it is a huge hole she left with her leaving.
But on the other hand, it is also still a huge cast.
Yes, so. That's true. I know. I see. That's a joke I was going to make before this news broke, where, you know, I was going to say, oh, all the people complaining that the cast is too big, SNL has heard your cries and made the cast even bigger. Because, like, before Ego left, the cast was one person bigger than last year. But, like, now that she left, it's about the same number. So it's still
big. The cosmic balance is maintained.
The cosmic balance.
I'm gonna miss her. She wasn't a cast member I ever got sick of, unlike some other long running cast members of SNL. But I'm not gonna name names. Listen to the previous 350 plus episodes, and you'll know my likes and dislikes.
Yes, listen to all of them.
Listen to all of them, all at once, in a marathon.
Right now, tonight.
Right now. Just pause this one right now. Go back. They're all on YouTube now. Go check and listen to them, and then report back to me on what I like and dislike.
Yeah, just listen to all of them straight through. Don't take a break. Don't go to sleep. Don't go to work. No. Just listen to that pod. All those
you podcasts. Can eat. You can stop for meals. I mean, we're not savages.
Yeah, but we'll allow from a meal break, but then after that, you get back.
Or order some takeout or something. Yeah.
Yes, but still, no. Don't poop. Don't shower. Just listen to that podcast.
No, just lie there in your filth and listen to our opinions. Yeah. I wonder how long that would take if we just added up all the runtime of the previous episodes we did. It would probably, it might be like a couple of weeks.
I would say so. I mean, each episode it's like
an hour and a half per episode.
Yeah.
So
like hour and a half times 300 plus episodes. Yeah. That's doing the math here. Carry the 5.
Right.
5 years worth of episodes. That can't be right.
No, that can't be right. We've been doing the podcast for 8 years, and we've been doing other things in our lives besides recording the podcast. Okay. So I don't think that's right.
I don't think that's right. Okay. I don't know math.
You know what? I got a calculator app on my phone. We posed this question. We're going to get into this. Because like, what, you know, somebody PM'd us on Facebook this week, and he was like, oh, please take a minute to learn the story of how College Humor became Dropout. And I was like, that wasn't relevant at all to the main topic of discussion, but okay.
Nope. Not at all. Okay,
that's 90 minutes. I'm going to figure an average of 90 minutes per episode times, I'm going to say 360 episodes because we've done like bonus episodes along the way. So 90 times 360, that's 32,400 minutes.
Okay.
We'll divide that by 60. That is 540 hours of this podcast.
525,600 minutes. I don't know the rest.
Yeah, I'm not going to join that.
But you knew that was from Rent, right?
No, I know that's from Rent. I actually had to, once in my community theater days, I actually had to briefly sing that on stage.
Oh.
Because like one of the community theaters I was involved with over the years was doing like an anniversary celebration thing.
Right.
And we were doing like, you know, one acts and like selected scenes and stuff.
Okay.
And they decided at the end to bring everybody out and sing that. The Seasons of Love from Rent.
Okay, as you
like
do.
That bit. Yeah. And I'm not a musical guy at all. There's a reason I don't do musicals, and I had to like sing that, and it was just like, oh, this is so uncomfortable. I never want to do this ever again. I'm totally right to not do musicals.
Oh boy.
Very uncomfortable moment. It was just one of those moments in your life where you're just like, this is not where I belong. I do not belong. I'm perfectly happy to play the scene of The Odd Couple that I did and the scene from the play version of MASH that I did. Those were great. Those turned out very nicely. But then at the end, I was just like, I got to stand here and sing. This fucking sucks.
I don't belong here.
Yeah.
See, look at me going from song to song.
That was very much the case. Yeah.
Oh dear.
And my tension read, because at one point like one of the people was sort of directing that I don't know, calling it a number seems generous, but she at one point went like, sing it Trumbull. And I was like,
you gave like, the, you gave the glower, the
well, it was just like, no, I've never done a musical. There's a reason I don't do them. Oh, I'm happy to just stay off and just like walk on later or stand in the back and just lip sync.
Oh my.
Anyway.
Ego Wodum.
But hey, speaking of lip syncing, there's no lip syncing with the folks we're covering today.
Heyo, there we go.
Yeah, with we're covering Spinal Tap, folks. Spinal Tap 2: The End Continues, the long-awaited sequel to 1984's This Is Spinal Tap, starring Michael McKean, Christopher Guest, Harry Shearer, directed by Rob Reiner, and
written by all those guys.
Yeah, and really interesting backstory behind this too. I was doing some research on this, and the rights were like more of a quagmire than I realized.
Really?
Yeah. So
how so?
There was actually a lawsuit a couple years back that I think it was initiated by Harry Shearer.
Sounds about right.
It says, this is from the IMDb tribute, despite becoming a box office success, cult classic, and a long-term home video and merchandise earner, the creators of This Is Spinal Tap, Rob Reiner, Christopher Guest, Michael McKean, Harry Shearer, earned almost nothing from the film for decades due to a poor rights deal with rights holders Vivendi and its subsidiaries. In the years following the film's 1984 release, they reportedly received just $98 in music royalties and $81 in merchandising revenue.
Each?
I mean, I think that's what Harry Shearer reported. But it says, a lengthy legal battle over profits and ownership began in 2016 and concluded with a settlement in 2020, finally allowing the creators to regain control of the rights and paving the way for the sequel nearly 40 years later. So that's part of why we haven't seen a theatrical sequel until this time. They've done other things. They've done like the odd album. They've done like some TV specials, and they've done concerts. And I guess they could do all that without getting approval of the movie company, which was originally Studio Canal. But like all the rights to Spinal Tap and the characters, they are in the hands of those four original partners.
Wow. Which,
I mean, that's great. I always like the rights and the profits of a property to go to the creators rather than corporations that had nothing to do with it outside of like releasing it.
Right.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I'm more of a supporter of this movie than I realized. So,
wow. I had no idea about that. All that stuff.
Yeah. They haven't been talking about that a whole lot. Cause you know, most of their promo appearances are in character. So you can't really talk about the legal battle as David St. Hubbins and Nigel Tufnel.
So, yeah, that makes sense. Interesting.
But I was looking forward to this movie because I really liked the, I'm a big fan of the original. I've seen the original like dozens of times over the years. I really liked the trailer of this.
Yeah, it looked good. I mean, I know we talked about it on the last episode where we were, mm-hmm, a little dubious of it because, you know, we've seen a number of comedies where they make a sequel to it years or decades after the original. Mm-hmm. And like, it's like, oh, we hope this isn't just like a nostalgic cash grab type of thing where people,
right,
you know, have fond memories of the original. So just based off of those fond memories, you can just make a whatever movie. And as long as you remind them of the original, you come and see this movie, and like that'll be that.
Well, my general feeling on that is it's really tough to make a sequel like decades after the original,
right?
Because yeah. I think if you wait like more than 10 years to make a sequel, people's expectations get so high.
Yeah,
and I think the original movie is kind of built up in people's memories as sometimes being better than it was.
Yeah. Now, listen to our episode on the Coming to America movie. Mm-hmm. That was definitely a movie.
I think, gosh, I already remember next to nothing about that sequel.
Yeah,
I'd have to listen back to our episode on it and be like, oh yeah, I sort of remember that. I vaguely remember that they, because like Eddie Murphy's character had a son and he basically gets drugged and raped, right?
Yeah, that's they say he has a son in the movie, and yeah. You know, Prince Akeem doesn't remember it because the night he was conceived, he was like some woman like put somebody in his drink.
Yeah,
and like he had a kid he didn't know about, and like just that alone, I was like, why would you?
That's a creepy premise.
Yeah, like it almost kind of ruined the entire movie for me because I was just like,
yeah,
that's a really bad take on like yeah. it seems to purport, you know, betray the character, and it just mm-hmm. it ain't as that funny. It's kind of like Jesus Christ, you know. It's, I mean, I know maybe they're trying to go for raunchy 80s humor, and but like that don't date rape ain't funny anymore, man. I mean, it never was.
Yeah, that's
It was just like yikes on bikes. It's creepy. Thing.
So yeah, I'm very glad the Spinal Tap sequel didn't do anything like that. None of the members of Spinal Tap have like secret kids we never knew about or yeah. anything like that. There's no like Tap the Next Generation.
Oh yeah, Tap Two Retapped.
Yeah. So I mean, the beauty of it, and I heard them say this in one of the promo interviews, was like, yeah, they've not evolved personally. They've not evolved musically. They're just like exactly the same as they were, but it's 40 years later.
Yeah, and they all have the same haircut.
I like that. I mean, yeah, they're great characters to do that with, too. Yeah. They all look the same. They're just older and grayer. So
yeah, all have the same haircuts, all dress like they used to back in the day. Even the character Marty DeBurgi, played by Rob Reiner, he still, you know, has the beard, but it's all gray, and he still has his little Navy cap that he wears.
Yeah, the USS Oral Sea.
Yes.
Because he couldn't use the name of the real ship, which I think was the Doral Sea. So, yeah, everybody's the same. They haven't really evolved. And they're coming back together on this, because the premise is they had on their contract with their old manager,
Ian
they
Faith.
Had to perform, yeah, played by the late, great Tony Hendra. They had to perform, like, one last contract contractually. And so Ian Faith's daughter, Hope, comes to them.
Yes.
Hope Faith. And she comes to them, and she's like, yeah, you have to do, like, one last concert. And they've like, long since broken up. I think they said the band broke up in 2009.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so the band broke up, but... Yeah, like they had to play one more show. And also, like, there's been sort of a resurgence in interest in Spinal Tap ever since a video of Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood performing Big Bottoms went viral on the TikToks.
Yeah, and it's like just a real brief cameo by Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood. We just see them like on, you know, in like one of those phone screens, basically.
Right.
Something that threw me out of the movie briefly early was like Marty DeBurgi is like introducing Spinal Tap, and he's kind of explaining the backstory, and he's like, "Yeah, 40 years ago, I directed this documentary about Spinal Tap, and it was supposed to be their final tour." And I'm like, "Wait a minute, no, they never said in the original movie that was their final tour. It was just a very bad tour."
Oh. Oh yeah,
that threw me out of the movie a bit because I was like, "You didn't say that in the original movie." I've seen the original movie a lot, and I don't remember anything about it being their final tour.
Yeah, that. Wow, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. That's very true.
And but he said, like, you know, that led to this resurgence of interest in Spinal Tap, and it kind of revived their careers. And they show some footage of real life appearances they've made as Spinal Tap over the years. I think they showed their appearance on SNL. They showed them at some award ceremony where they're being lowered on stage by wires.
Yeah.
Nigel has to like cut his wire.
Yeah. Them at like Wembley Stadium and like a few other places.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they performed like lots of real concerts as Spinal Tap and all that. So
for sure. So, So Marty DeBurgi, the director, goes on this quest to find the original players to see where everybody's at. He's able to find Nigel, who I believe mm-hmm. he lives in Scotland, and he has a cheese and guitar shop.
Yes, where he sells both cheese and guitars, but people can also come in and trade cheese for guitars trade guitars for cheese. And he explains that in great detail. And he's since gotten married. He's there was a woman who came into his cheese shop and they fell in love.
Yeah. Like, I think she said, he gave me a bit of cheese and it made, you know, just looking at him and eating the cheese made me so happy. I just want to take off all my clothes and stay forever. And Nigel's like, and she did.
Yes.
So that's lovely. True love.
Yeah. It's a cute story. And, you know, like Nigel and David had one of their periodic falling outs. They're kind of vague onto what the issue was this time, but they haven't spoken in years and years. And none of the guys are really in touch with each other.
Yeah, it's been forever. We see David St. Hubbins. He's in California performing in a mariachi band. Mm-hmm. And he's also works in the studio doing like scores for podcasts.
Yes.
Too.
Yes.
And like he's also done scores for movies. Like he did like one, I think, or and podcast too. He did one like a horror thriller podcast about murders happening in a assisted living facility called Night of the Assisted Living Dead.
And that made me laugh out loud. I think that was the first time when he said that title, Night of the Assisted Living Dead, that made me laugh out loud in the theater.
Yeah. That was a good one.
Michael McKean has a talent with clever puns. Like in the first one, he mentioned like the Isle of Lucy. Isle as an island. and you know, in this one, he has the Night of the Assisted Living Dead. He's very good with those puns.
Very good. Yeah. There's one that happens at the very end of the movie that it still makes me chuckle.
Yeah. To this day. And I'm please understand, I am not a big pun guy. Usually I hear a pun or I'm just like, ugh.
I grow,
I've just been asked to sing Seasons of Love. But Michael McKean can craft a pun that makes me go, ha! So.
And we also learned that David's also been doing music for Call Waiting, for Hold Music.
Hold Music.
Yeah, and he played him one song that won him a Holdie. The award for On Hold Music.
Yeah. And we find out what happened to his wife from the first movie. What was her name? Was it June?
Janine.
That was it. Yeah. Before I met Janine, my life was cosmically a shambles. And and Marty is like, oh, do you know what happened to Janine? And David's like, no, we're not in touch. And then we cut to Janine and she is now a nun.
Right.
Like she's found a new fella.
I think she said she got inspired because she was in a coffee shop and she was drinking some tea or something. And she heard a voice say, you know, every breath you take, every move you make, I'll be watching you. Yeah. And then I think Marty DeBerge says, oh, that sounds like that song by the Police.
That's the Sting. And
yeah. And she goes, oh.
Yeah. So several of the significant characters from the first film, Janine, Bobby Fleckman, played by Fran Drescher, and Artie, played by Paul Schaefer, they all have like basically one scene cameos.
Yeah.
We just kind of see what they're up to these days. And I don't know if that was just because we didn't necessarily have room for them in this new story, or if that's all the time they had in their schedule, or some combination of the both. But it's nice to see them at least.
Yeah, we see Bobby Fleckman, like, literally in it for, like, a minute. She's, like, the CEO of a PR firm right now and saying, like, taking care of the band stressed her out so much she became a Buddhist. And PR man Artie Fufkin, he now sells used cars.
Yeah, and he's got those waving, what do you call those things?
Wavy arm, wacky tube men.
Tube men. And I would assume at the time that Fran Drescher shot her cameo, she was still like president of SAG actress.
She probably didn't
have a whole lot of time in her schedule.
So. They're just like, just shoot my office.
Yeah. It would not shock me in the least if that was like Fran Drescher's real life office.
Yeah. I think it might be.
Yeah. Cause I think when you're president of SAG after, that pretty much takes up all your time. And like, as we're recording this, Sean Astin just got elected to succeed her. So,
Rudy.
We also
catch up with Derek Smalls, who he has a a glue museum, the new museum.
A glue museum, yes, yeah.
Which, for the life of me, I don't understand why he didn't call it a glueseum. It's right there.
Oh, that would have been good.
Come on,
that would have been good. That would have been good.
The world's first glueseum.
I like that. I like that. And I am now mad that they did not call it a glueseum. That is good. I did not think of that. Kudos to you, sir.
Thank you.
And while Marty's interviewing Derek, he gets a glue bottle stuck up his nose. But they just try to press on and continue the interview.
Yeah. He tells somebody to get some solvent. We also learned that Derek got into cryptocurrency, of course. Being a crypto rep, he got Dave and Nigel into it. They lost quite a bit of money. And
they lost like all their money. And he's like, and he's not sure if they're still cross at him about that.
That might be it. And he also,
that might be it.
That might be it. He also came up with a song called Hell Toupee.
Yes.
Get it?
Toupee as in the wig you wear on your head when you're when you're a balding person.
Hell Toupee. Do you get it? Do you get it?
Yeah. And that's where I think that's where they bring in the Garth Brooks Trisha Yearwood cameo thing where they're doing Big Bottom.
Oh, right. You're right. Yes.
Yeah. So it's kind of like I'm going by like a Wikipedia summary right now because in the theater, I can't take notes.
All right. So the boys get together in New Orleans. That's where they're going to play the big show at the at the big arena. That we find out that the house they're staying in is actually part of like a ghost tour.
Yeah, and the guy leading the ghost tour is one of like Christopher Guest regulars from his films like Best in Show and The Mighty Wind and all that. And I'm blanking on the actor's name right now. Let me see if I can find him in the cast list.
Okay,
I think it's Don Lake, right?
Yes, Don Lake. You're right.
It's Don Lake. Yeah,
yeah. They did have like a nice little joke between Derek and David where they were talking about, we should go on a ghost tour, but like, you know, during the daytime, not at night. At night it's too scary because like, you know, in the daytime the ghosts are just rumors.
So there's still tension with David and Nigel. We don't really know what that's about, what's going on. There aren't even really any hints about it, but they decide they get a new manager. They get a fellow named Simon Howler.
Yeah.
Who he's like this music producer. And we find out later in the film that he cannot actually hear music.
Yeah. Like he, I mean,
he's like got music deafness.
Music blindness. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know how some people are face blind? He's got like music deafness. So
it's like, ask me to sing any song. He's like, happy birthday to you. Can't do it.
Yeah.
Don't know it. Can't do it.
Yeah. So, and you know, he's got goofy ideas to promote Tap and Hope Faith, played by Carrie Goodleyman. She has goofy ideas to promote Tap. They at one point they suggest, since Tap never got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they just got a note that said from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame saying "fuck off." they decide to start their own Hall of Fame, and it's like, what do they call it? Like the Tap Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's like International Rock. It looks like an IHOP, basically.
It is an IHOP. It is obviously like a refurbished IHOP.
Yeah.
And they're looking at the miniature model of the building, and David just goes, why do I suddenly crave pancakes?
they did have one joke that, like, where Simon was talking about, well, you know, one thing that would make this concert legendary is if one of you, you know, if not all of you, but at least one of you died. While on stage.
Yes.
And I think Nigel was like, well, you mean like pretend to die, not like actually die, right?
Right.
And I think Simon goes, well, I mean, you know, I think that would complicate matters if you pretend.
Yeah. And David Kenner's like, well, what if one of us fell into a coma? And they're like, oh, that's interesting. That's thinking outside the box, literally.
I wasn't familiar with this actor, but I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah. He was good. I was not familiar. That was Chris Addison. He is a British comedian, writer, actor, director. He was in The Thick of It and in The Loop. So
He's an In the Loop man.
Yeah, yeah. So
okay, all right. So he can improv pretty well then.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah, because like you cast somebody in a Spinal Tap movie, you want somebody who can go toe to toe with these guys because they're going to go in all sorts of nutty directions. And I was reading they only did like two or three takes of each scene, I guess, to keep it fresh.
Oh, nice.
But they were recording with multiple cameras to kind of capture the moment, of course.
Right, of course.
So everything seems very spontaneous. So the next task is Spinal Tap decides we need a new drummer because it's Spinal Tap. They have a long tradition of drummers dying under mysterious circumstances.
They go to the studio, they try out drummers. We get like literally all types of drummers. There's a little old lady drummer. There's a one guy who plays like the Indian drum. I think it's like the tabla or something like that.
There's one guy on bongos.
One old man just slapping his knee like ham bone style. And of course, at the very end, we get a blue man group drummer just banging away.
That was cute. That was very funny. And I wonder if that was a genuine blue man group person.
Might be. So then we see
Jason Sudeikis auditioned to be in the Blue Man Group.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Shortly before he joined SNL. I think he got pretty far. I can't remember if he was accepted or if he just came very close, but he got to the point of testing and like wearing the Blue Man makeup.
Oh,
and yeah. That's... You know, a number of years back, I actually did Blue Man Group for Halloween.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me who you tried out for the Blue Man Group.
No.
All right.
I was joking with a couple of my other friends who also like shaved their heads, and we were like, "Oh, we should all do Blue Man Group," and one of the three of us like chickened out, and he did something else. But two of us did Blue Man Group, so it was just a two man Blue Man Group. But they actually sell kits where you can with like the right shade of blue, and then there's like a spray you put over that to give it that shiny sheen.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's a pretty simple Halloween costume to do because you just really just need a black turtleneck, black pants, and that makeup.
Wow. I mean,
and you know, maybe some blue gloves. So.
Yeah. Halloween's coming up, guys. So
if you're working on a budget, that's a good one.
It's
funnier if you have a couple more bald friends though.
Yeah. But. You need a group. I think that's the one drawback. You need friends, more than one. So
me and my friend Craig, we were both going to the same Halloween party, and we both just got there, and we both just sort of greeted each other silently. Unfortunately, the third guy did not do that. He was doing like a couple's costume with his wife. So.
Boo!
Yeah.
Oh, you love your wife. You're gonna. Oh.
Yeah.
I won't say it.
Yeah, bros before the women that they're romantically involved with.
Yeah.
It's wordier, but it's nicer.
Yeah. Come on. Band of brothers, man. What's up?
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, hey, they did a Star Trek themed thing, and it was very cute.
So okay. All right.
Yeah. He's a very nice guy.
All right. I won't hate. I
would have liked to have three, but what are you going to do?
All right. Yeah, that's true. All right. So back to the drummer. So the band gets on a Zoom call with Questlove to try to offer him the part of being a drummer, and Quest is like, I think I have a colonoscopy that day.
And then finally he just kind of comes clean. He's like, I don't want to die, man. And they were like, how many drummers have you lost? And David's like, 12, I think. And Nigel like sort of thinks, and he's like running through him, and he goes, 11.
They went to 11.
Of course you give Nigel that. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I didn't realize until this week, until like the day before I saw the film, I was like, holy shit, this film opened on September 12th, it was the day after the 11th of the month. So it was like 11, but it's, you know, one lauda, isn't it?
Do you think they did that on purpose?
I feel like it has to be on purpose. I think they decided to open it as close to the 11th as possible. Because if they're opening on the 12th, they probably had some preview screenings on the 11th.
That's true.
I mean, it would have been brilliant if they could have opened this on November 11th, but I'm sure the marketing considerations and all that.
It could have been, if they opened this on November 11th, 2011.
Yeah.
My God.
That was Nigel Tufnel Day. I joined a group on Facebook that was like, celebrate Nigel Tufnel on 11-11-11.
Wow.
So they talked to Questlove. They talked to other famous drummers. They talked to Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Lars Ulrich from Metallica. They're all Zoom calls.
Yeah. So they zoomed them in. Like Chad is like, I can't do it, but you know what? You should reach out to Lars. He's the perfect deal for it.
Yeah.
And then
and Lars is like, I can't do it, but you should reach out to Chad.
Exactly. I think at one point Lars sees that Hope Faith is in there. It's like, oh yeah, Hope, how you doing? How's mm-hmm. your, oh yeah, you're Ian's daughter. How's your old man doing? And he's like, well, he's dead. No, I think Lars is like, how's your dad holding up? And he's like, well, no, he's dead. Derek quickly says, yeah, he's not holding up. He's holding down.
I wish it, you know, honestly, it would have been nice if they could have been in the same room as some of those drummers. It would have been funnier, I think, if they'd been part of that montage.
It would have been, yeah.
Instead of just doing Zoom calls, but.
Yeah, but I mean, I get it. It's hard to.
They're busy people, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to get right together.
And also, my other thing is I was watching this and I was like, you know, it would have been, I think it would have been awesome if they could have had Mickey Dolenz in there.
Ooh.
As a drummer. Because he is A, the one surviving monkey. B, he was the drummer. And C, you know, he was a monkey, so he also has a background in improv comedy. Mickey Dolenz is a very funny fellow.
I like that.
I feel like that was a missed opportunity. If I'd been involved with this film at all, I would have said, like, guys, we should try to get Mickey Dolenz to do a cameo as auditioning to be a Spinal Tap drummer.
Yeah, that's actually pretty brilliant. Very nice.
Thank you. I think so. And also, I'm a Monkees fan, so I would have loved to have seen
that. Yes. So. Justice for the Monkees.
Yeah. But, you know, and also, he's like, you know, an older fellow, so.
Yeah. He's a man of a certain age.
Yeah,
but unfortunately we don't get a monkey, but we do get a Dee Dee, because we see this this one woman comes into audition and she named Dee Dee, and she freaking rocks it, and she's, you know, she's like full of energy and pep and just
young tattooed, kind of punky, and she's like a big tap fan, and she's just killing it on the drum, and the actress obviously is a real life drummer. She's drumming for real, and she's doing a great job at it.
Yeah, like she was really likable and nice, and like part of me was like, mm-hmm. oh no, I hope she doesn't die in this movie because she's so nice.
You're kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop all through the movie and they kind of make it as like they talk about how she's a health nut. She's like eating fruits and almonds and all that, and she's being very, very careful because there is such a history of Spinal Tap drummers meeting unfortunate ends.
Yeah. So like, so that's Dee Dee Crockett, played by Valerie Franco, apparently.
I did not know her. She was new to me, but she was great. I wish she could have had a little more to do.
Yeah, for sure. And then we also get a new keyboardist, CJ Caucasian, aka CJ Caucasian Jerry.
Right. They don't do too much with him.
No. Or Caucasian Jeff. Or
Caucasian
Jeff. That's weird.
It says Jerry on the Wikipedia page.
It says Jeff on the IMDb page.
But what the hell? Okay. Wow. IMDb and Wikipedia, you got to get your shit together, man.
No, I mean, because
are you two going to have to, like, fight it out in an alleyway, like Thriller style, where we tie your wrists together and you each got a knife?
Da-da! Da-da! Yeah. But yeah, I do remember...
Wait, that's not Thriller style. That's Beat It style.
Oh, no, Beat It is da 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 da.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the video.
Oh, Thriller is zombies. Okay.
Yeah, Thriller was the zombies and everybody doing that dance.
Right, okay, you know,
with the arms.
Wow. And
Beat It is the one where it's like Michael Jackson stops gang violence.
Yes, as he's wont to do.
And gang violence was never a problem again.
Nope, all it took was Michael Jackson and his bejeweled red leather jacket.
Yeah. Everyone's just like, they're so fashionable. And, you know, hey guys, you know, do this choreography with me and you will not want to fight each other and knife each other to death anymore.
That's all it takes, man.
You just do some of those cool slides and, you know, I don't know the names of dance moves.
You know, electric slides. You got it.
The electric slide, like they're at a wedding.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're in the lead up to the concert. The concert's happening June 17th, I think they said it was, and they're rehearsing in New Orleans. They spend a lot of time just kind of rehearsing in this one studio space in New Orleans.
Yeah, I will say that. Like, I mean, I get it. You got to show the process of them preparing for the show, and like, you know, dealing with whatever's happening in between Nigel and David. But yeah, it does feel like almost like a bottle episode where they're just staying in.
Yeah, I wish there could have been, like, because on the first movie they're on tour, so you see them in a variety of places in a variety of situations. I wish we could have had more of that variety in this movie, because it's just like for a long stretch in the middle, it's just we kind of just see them in this studio space.
Yeah,
and it's probably easier to shoot it that way. They're all older, and you know, who knows if there were time constraints or whatever. Like at one point late in the film, David goes walking around in New Orleans, and he's actually walking around the real life New Orleans. And I was like, oh right, this movie takes place in New Orleans. So
yeah, like I thought maybe they do show some, you know, establishing shots of New Orleans here and right. there,
but they but don't
yeah.
go outside that much. You know,
they need to really explore the space.
They need to explore the space. Yeah. Exactly.
Got a fever. But I mean, during one of the rehearsal times, there's some tension, of course, between Nigel and David. You know, no one addresses it because no one can talk about their feelings. And we see Sir Paul McCartney just stopping by.
He just wanders in. Which is, it's so wonderfully understated. It's hilarious, you know, just, and Paul just like, he wanders in, and Paul's not playing it up too much. He's just like kind of there. He's just like kind of watching, and he plays with Tap for a bit.
I think because between David and Nigel, there's some tension because like there's like one part in the song that Nigel doesn't like, one guitar lick he doesn't like, but David likes it. And then I think Paul kind of sighs with Nigel. It's like, yeah, that one little bit is kind of silly. You can just get rid of it, and that Brussels David the wrong way a little bit.
Yeah, he Brussels at that, and I gotta tell you, it just so happens that my housemate was rewatching Get Back, the Beatles documentary, so I was watching the end of Get Back literally the night before I watched this movie, and it's very surreal, like seeing Paul McCartney acting as a mediator to the band. And I wish they could have done like a little more with that, maybe got like a little more self-referential.
Yeah,
with that.
Yeah, like I mean, this part. I mean, it's Paul McCartney. I mean, dude's royalty, music
big
royalty.
Get for the movie.
Yeah, but like I did think the scene was a little slow, just because like you know there is a little tension between Paul and David, but they don't really do too much with it, and then they end up singing Cups and Cakes.
Yes, and like, which like, was the flip side to their first Spinal Tap's first song, "Gimme Some Money" from like 1964.
Right, and I don't know. I mean, while it is a good song and they do well with it, I did think it kind of the pacing kind of brought down the slowed down the movie just a bit around there. I thought
there's a very funny interview between Marty and like a one-on-one interview with David Sean Hubbins. And he's just like, oh yeah, well, you know, you saw like Paul McCartney has such a toxic personality that it just didn't work. And that was a very funny line that made me laugh out loud. And I wish they could have done a little more with that. And Paul McCartney can be a funny guy too. I mean, watch A Hard Day's Night if you don't believe me. And you probably shouldn't watch Give My Regards to Broad Street because that is not a good movie. But you have very good music in it. So, but yeah, one of the things that really made me laugh out loud was the one-on-one interview that David does with Marty DeBurgi afterwards, where he's talking about Paul's toxic personality. I thought that was very funny.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, Paul can be, pretty. I mean, all the Beatles were funny in their, you know, in their own right. I mean,
yes,
John was funny.
Absolutely.
George was a friggin' riot. You know, pretty chintzy.
They were all like witty guys, and they all had that Liverpudlian sense of humor to it. I kind of wish that. Okay, well, with Paul, and then later with Elton John, I kind of wish with one of those guys, they'd had it so that one of them had like some bad blood or history with Spinal Tap. I feel like that might've offered some more comedic opportunities. Cause like they both come in and they're both meeting Tap for the first time.
Yeah. But they're both huge fans of them. They've heard of them,
but they're both huge fans. And I'm just like, I kind of wish like it'd been like, oh yeah, we've never gotten along with Paul, you know, ever since we were like competing for the same venues back in 1964 or something like that.
I mean,
look, and I get, you know, Paul McCartney and Elton John, they're musicians. They're not necessarily actors, even though they both acted a bit. But, you know, have Tap like give this extensive backstory and just direct Paul or Elton to be like, yeah, you don't like these guys. Let's have a little tension.
Yeah, like, I mean, then, yeah, I mean, because it does stand to reason that, you know, they're all British. They could have run in the same circles back in the day, or at least known the same people. So there could have been more.
Yeah,
of a...
and I think Paul even talks about, like, oh, yeah, it's strange that we never ran into each other before. And I'm like, yeah, it kind of is.
Very much so. Yeah, it's almost like somebody.
Very much so. Like, you know Mick Jagger. Yeah,
it's almost like somebody didn't want to write a backstory for all you knowing.
Yeah, because I know this is how they did the first film, but like they sort of worked out the backstory for the band, or at least the broad strokes of the backstory of the band, so that everybody could be more or less on the same page when they're improvising in character.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like maybe this one was a little more loosey-goosey because of the cameos or whatever.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Like, I mean, while I did like the scene with Elton John, because, you know, I love Elton John. Yeah, yeah, I did. That's another scene I thought was like, all right, I mean, this is cool that he's here, but didn't seem to... And then they kind of, you know, doing like another jam session where they're actually playing a song together. And it's like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah,
but it's not.
Yeah.
Is it comedy? Or I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I just feel. And look, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed the movie. It made me laugh a few times. I recommend that people go see it. Yes. I just feel like it could have been. There are a couple places it could have been a little more than it was.
Yes. So. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So then that happens, and then of course we see their PR man Simon coming up with some ideas for them for the tour, merchandising. Yeah. You know, because of their demographic is now older, so he says, oh, maybe we can get into some, you know, you can put your names on some stair lifts or walk-in showers, right. You know, and then that's when they have the new brand of water, tap water. Which is in like
tap water, which comes in a little miniature Stonehenge thing, and it is literally just tap water.
But, and cause, yeah, I think Dave's like, oh, it has like little minerals in it and stuff. And it's like, no, it's just tap water.
Yeah, yeah.
Then, I mean, there's other little things we see, like, you know, Derek hits on the new drummer Dee Dee, and that's when we learn.
Oh yes,
we learn that you know. Dee Dee is actually a gay, has a girlfriend. We see little scenes.
And again, I was like, okay, it's 2025. We need kind of a stronger punchline to this than just, oh, she's gay and she has a girlfriend.
Yeah, I kind of thought that would lead to something.
I mean, that's not really a startling twist in 2025, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's cute because we get to see Derek be uncomfortable with it, but I was just like, I mean, you know, maybe if we saw all three members hitting on her at various points, that could have built it up a little more.
Yeah, that was just like a,
like because there was a joke in the first film that they cut out of the release, but where it's like all three members slept with the same groupie, so we see them all with cold sores.
Yeah, oof.
On their lips.
It took me a while. Like maybe I saw it too young. I don't know, but like it took me a minute to get that joke because they don't explain it. No one mentioned
it's
it
never
all.
Commented on. No. It's just they all have herpes and
you just
they've been getting it from the same group.
Yeah, so you're just about to do the math in your own head where you're like, okay, Eskimo brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's it.
We see Nigel showing Marty one of his custom guitars with the little has a small little piece of cheese and a cheese cutting board in the back of it with the little
cheese grater. That scene, it was kind of a callback to the This One Goes to 11 scene from the first movie where Nigel's showing Marty all his wah-wah pedals and his foot pedals. And he's got like a wide variety of them for various guitar effects.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, I mean, it's a cute gag.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's a cute scene and... I mean, not. I don't think it's quite as funny as the This One Goes to 11, but I thought it was a worthy successor.
Yeah, so. I would say so. And then we see a few other things, like we see the PR guy Simon complaining that the band is because like throughout all the rehearsal, the band they're just kind of sitting down, they're not actually moving, and that causes him to be concerned. Like, how come they're not moving around? Are they just
they're not active enough?
Yeah, are they going to be sitting down on the day? So that causes the PR man to have the boys on an exercise regimen. So he hires a man by the name of, what's his name? I didn't write it down. Shoot.
It's John Michael Higgins.
It's John Michael Higgins.
The character name doesn't matter. It's John Michael Higgins.
John Michael Higgins, pretty much dressed up like a straight up Jack LaLanne. And he's.
Yeah. Yeah. He's very retro. He's, yeah. He is. He's even got like those little sort of slipper shoes that Jack LaLanne wore back in the day.
Yeah. You know, and he gets some exercising. You know, he asks if anybody has any penis pains. Just straight up.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a clever little aside, I thought.
That was cute.
Yeah, yeah. We see them doing the tech rehearsals at the arena during the big show. We see them trying out playing a Big Bottom, one of course their big songs. And one thing I never noticed is when they're doing Big Bottom, they're all playing basses. I was like, oh, is that how in the original song, is everybody just playing a bass? Is that how you get that bassy sound?
That might be, yeah. Oh. Yeah, it sounds like a bass line to me.
Yeah,
I don't have a real practiced ear, and I'm not a musician, but I think they are playing all playing basses. That's
interesting.
Might be part of the gag.
And then we see, of course, the big floating backside during that song that they have, and it has like a fart noise out of it with some smoke coming out of it
I think it was like a Stonehenge model, and then it turned around, and then it's a backside on the other model.
Because, you know.
And they actually have it fart and shoot out smoke, which the members of TAP are like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
So.
So that's, you know, that's that. And we also see Dee Dee asking one of the tech guys, making a request that the drums be pushed closer to the front of the stage. Because her reasoning is, when we were in rehearsals, I was really close to the guys. It was like a unit. So I want to get that same closeness on the day. So can you push the drum set, closer to them, closer to the front of the stage, which will come into play later in the movie.
Foreshadowing. So Nigel and David, they're still having the tension. It finally comes out. David just kind of explodes at Nigel, and he's like, well, here's what happened. You slept with my wife on October 9th, 2009. And Nigel's like, no, I didn't. I didn't sleep with your wife. And they kind of break up again.
Yeah. And David storms off. We also learned that Simon, the PR guy, is leaving the band.
Oh, yes. Because he's meeting his birth mother.
So he claims.
Yeah.
So he's just kind of.
And they're like, you can't do that on another day? You've waited this long to meet her and you can't put it off a day or two?
I can't just leave my birth mother, can I?
Yeah.
Gotta go.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, this is tough times.
Yeah. Yeah. So David, he takes a walk around New Orleans, and this is a point where we're shooting outside, and I'm like, oh right, this takes place in New Orleans. We've been inside in rehearsal space for so long, I'd kind of forgotten.
Yeah, and then they show some old footage of a young David and Nigel just kind of singing this.
Well, he comes across this black bluesman playing in the street, and that reminds him of his early days with playing with Nigel, because they were like school chums who grew up together. And then we have some footage. I think it's a deleted scene from the first film.
That's what I thought, because I don't remember this being in the movie. So I was like,
No. We hear them singing their first song, All the Way Home. And what song are they singing? This one.
It's like an old blues standard, I think.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so we find some use for one of the deleted scenes of the first one. And the first movie, if you've never watched it on DVD or anything like that, it's got a ton of deleted scenes and subplots and things like that. So there's a new Criterion collection coming out very, very shortly that I have on order, and I'm looking forward to getting that. So
nice.
And even more so, because now that I know that that's all going to go to the people who created Spinal Tap, and I'm very happy for that. So
support the artists.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, buy that.
So David gets reminded of the good old days, and then he goes back to the arena. You know, the place is packed.
Yeah.
Screaming fans want tap, tap, tap. And then they go out and perform. But before they do, Nigel and David have a moment. David tells Nigel, like, I forgive you for whatever you did. And Nigel says, like, I didn't do anything. And then,
yeah, that's nice you're forgiving me, but I didn't do anything.
Yeah, but Dave, Dave said, I forgive you for that too. And then, and then they go rock it out. We get some Hellhole,
the big climactic concert. Yeah,
get some heavy Hellhole, heavy duty, underrated classic.
Heavy duty. Just want to make some earbuds, earbuds bleed. Eardrums bleed.
Eardrums bleed.
This is what this is another reason I don't sing. I don't remember lyrics.
Yes, karaoke is your friend.
It's kind of bad when you have to sing a certain thing at a certain time when you don't remember the words.
Oh, I don't know how the pros do it.
No, mm-hmm. absolutely not. Now, even karaoke, I don't mess with that shit.
Really? Karaoke's dope. What are you talking about?
Generally, I generally don't mess with what? I'm very self-conscious about singing.
Oh, come on. Karaoke is about letting go of your inhibitions, baby. Let down
your... Darren, you've known me for how long? I'm like nothing but inhibitions.
That's right. Call me Mr. Inhibition.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've known each other for like over a dozen years at this
point. That's true. All right, you got me.
How often do I throw caution to the wind and be like, oh, I'm gonna do this Darren thing? No, that's not me.
All right, no. Yes, you're the Bert to my Ernie. I get it.
I've accepted that as my lot in life.
Okay, so. That's fine. You know, nothing wrong with doing.
By the way, that's a great Halloween costume for us, and we sincerely have to do that someday.
Oh, Bert and Ernie.
Bert and Ernie. Yeah.
I can't do his laugh. Fuck.
That was pretty good. Is that for doing a cold?
Sounds like I have like asthma attack or something.
Well, so does Ernie. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Ernie. Okay. So they perform. Doing the pigeon. All right. Yeah. So they perform on stage. They're rocking it. They're rolling it. Then they get to the big song Stonehenge, where we see Elton John coming up from the floor playing the grand piano, and of course then we see them lowering of the Stonehenge, which lowers down.
This time it's a full size.
It's a full size one. It's a big one. And it
it's a big. But because the elevated stage for the drum set has been moved forward, the Stonehenge just lands on like the edge of that stage, and so it's very unstable. It starts wobbling immediately.
Yeah, and then of course that's when they get the little people. Is that the right?
Yeah, the little people is the druids.
Yeah, I think one of them is the guy from Jackass too, Acuna. If I'm mistaken.
Oh, really?
I believe so.
I didn't know that.
But yeah, then they come out and they dance around, and of course,
go ahead.
Oh, yeah. They dance around. They bump into the Stonehenge. Of course, it's already unstable. Them hitting it makes it more unstable. Oh my God! The whole thing topples over and lands right on the man, and Elton John.
Yeah, on Elton John. Elton John is crushed underneath, and he screams, fuck Spinal Tap.
Yes, and I think David says, please, someone erase my browser history.
Yeah, that was very funny. I like that. I think Michael McGean probably made me laugh the most in this movie.
Yeah, I can see that. He comes up with some good one-liners and whatnot.
And we cut to all four of them in the hospital. Marty is there visiting them in the hospital, giving them like one last interview. And they're all in traction. They've all got like broken limbs and stuff. And I like that Elton John's casts are all like bedazzled and fabulous.
He has like a piano and jewels on his cast leg.
That was very cute.
As it's happening, the credits roll.
The credits start rolling, but we have more scenes playing under the credits, like the first film. Mm-hmm. And he's talking with Dee Dee, the drummer. And he congratulates her on being the only Spinal Tap drummer who survived. And she's eating her fruit and nut lunch.
Uh-oh.
And then she starts to choke.
Yeah.
Marty tries to give her the Heimlich maneuver, and we do a freeze frame. So we're not sure if she died or not.
Question mark?
So,
Yeah. So. And that's pretty much it. We do get a few other... interview snippets, like when Marty's interviewing.
Yeah, little outtakes that probably didn't fit into the film.
Yeah, like there are a couple that made me laugh, like where, like I said, like Michael McKean as David talks to Marty, talk about how he's been inspired to write a memoir from Bruce Springsteen's memoir. Like, you know, of course the memoir being called I am Springsteen going on Spreventeen.
Again, Michael McKean. I don't know if he like comes up with these beforehand or if he's coming up with them off the cuff, but Michael McKean, you are the nation's number one punster. You are the poet laureate of punster.
I was like, that is a silly, dopey dad joke, and goddamn it makes me laugh.
I love Michael McKean so much.
Spreven.
For so many reasons. I love him for Spinal Tap. Mm. I love him for Laverne and Shirley. I love her for Better Call Saul. Mm. I love him for Clue.
Oof.
Michael McKean, he's just a ray of sunshine in the world.
He rocks my world.
Do you remember he actually responded to a tweet from mine?
Ooh, once. I don't remember that.
Yeah, I think it was when we covered Clue for the podcast. Oh. And I actually was like, okay, what the hell? I'll write to Michael McKean, and I just said something like, you know, Michael McKean, and tagged him. We say really nice things about you on the SNL Nerds podcast. We're covering Clue this week, and he just responded, "How dare you?" such a great, funny Michael McKean response.
Cease and desist.
Yeah. I tell you, this is something I miss about Twitter. Like, I was following both him and his wife, Annette O'Toole, and they just seemed so sweet, and they seemed like such delightful people. And I was like, I'm 53. I still kind of want to be adopted by you two.
Yeah. Fill out the papers, Mr. McKean, please. Yeah.
They just seem so lovely.
Not too late. So, yeah, they're lovely people. Yeah.
And also, you know what? I bet Christopher Guest and Jamie Lee Curtis are also lovely. Because like Jamie Lee Curtis, I'm just delighted by every interview I see with her. She seems so cool, and she's just so no BS with her.
Yeah.
And she's great.
She's delightful.
I wish she could have popped up in this movie. I don't know if she's just like improv adverse or something, but she never popped up in any Christopher Guest improv movies either.
That's true. I know she did an episode or two of Reno 911, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
She popped up in that. So I was like, oh yeah, why wouldn't she pop up in her husband's work?
Maybe they just don't like to mix business and pleasure, or maybe she's just not comfortable doing improv. I don't know. I don't get it. I have never even heard her talk about this or address it.
Mm.
It's weird. You'd think he would have used her because she's a talented actor and
in her own right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, even like maybe just used, but she could have played Nigel's wife.
Yeah. I don't see why not.
Yeah. It's not a big part. She could have come in and done some kick-ass stuff for a scene or two.
Yeah. That would have been good. I don't know why I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe she's busy with other stuff. She's doing a lot of movies. Maybe she was filming.
She is in demand, and yeah, she's still working a lot. But
yeah, maybe she was filming a Freakier Friday or something like that.
Who knows? Who knows? She's got stuff. I've not seen that Freakier Friday movie. Is it any good?
No, I didn't. I never saw the first one just because it looked like it's like a kids movie. But like I know,
it does look kind of kiddy.
Yeah, and I know they came out with the sequel because all the teenagers that have a strong affinity for that movie who liked it when they were growing up. Now they're grown-ups.
Right.
And so now they can take their kids.
Their moms themselves.
Yeah. So like, you know, the market for that.
I know with that one, I think they went a little more complex with it. So it's not just Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan switching places. They're like two other people. They're switching bodies.
Yeah. It's like
and I'm like, that just sounds way too complex for me.
Yeah. It's like a four-person switcheroo or something like that.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it. Well, another outtake that they had during the credits is when Marty's talking to Simon, Simon talked about how he manages this a cappella rap group now. And it's like it's been difficult because there is a thin line between a cappella rap and someone just shouting threats that rhyme. Which I don't know why that made me chuckle. It did.
That's cute.
Yeah. And also, during one of the interviews, Derek Smalls admits that he's the one that actually had the affair with David's wife, and Marty's like, do you ever tell David that? It's like, no, we don't need to tell him that.
Yeah.
I don't know. That whole part, but like the rift between Nigel and David, I thought that would be like a bigger thing, but
it felt a little undeveloped as a subplot.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
Yeah. And I think it worked well in the first film, and I guess they wanted to sort of pick up that arc and acknowledge that cycle without repeating what they did in the first film, but it felt, I feel like they could have done something more with that somehow. And
yeah.
again, liked the film, made me laugh. I'd give it like probably 3.5 stars out of 5. So I think it's a solid sequel. I don't feel like they sullied the name of Spinal Tap or anything.
No, not at all. No.
I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I'm happy enough with it.
Yeah, it's just like I there were a couple of things where it's like, oh, it would have been funny to have Mickey Dolenz in there. Oh, it would have been funny if McCartney or Elton John had some bad blood with them, and we got into that.
Yeah, for sure. Like I kind of
I feel like if they'd done some of that, if like all the drummers weren't on just on Zoom calls, or if like more of the band members had been hitting on Dee Dee, the new drummer.
Yeah.
That would have taken it up to, like, you know, 4 stars or above for me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is weird that, like, this sequel's been, like, 40 years in the making, and we finally got it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I feel like you left some stuff out. Like, there could have been more added to this.
Yeah, there's, like, a little more, I'm grasping for the metaphor, but I can't quite reach it.
Okay.
You know, like, there's a little more juice in the orange or something, you know? Oh. That's not a phrase, but... You know what I mean.
I see what you're saying. And
yeah,
that's our episode, guys. Spinal Tap to the End Continues. It's a worthy successor, but, you know, could have been more. And speaking of juice and the orange, good sir.
Oh, look at that.
Oh,
yeah. You're getting so good at the transitions, my friend.
I'm getting there. I'm getting there. 300 episodes in. I'm getting there.
You've learned well, my young Padawan.
Thank you. Thank you, Sensei. But yeah, because our next episode, we're going to go back to school because it's September. Mm-hmm. It's back to school time, back to school season.
Right.
And we're going to talk about a movie that I remember seeing in the theaters, and I remember really liking it. And I thought this movie was better than I thought it'd be. And it's kind of, I feel like it's kind of underrated for sure. And that movie, that movie is Orange County.
Orange County starring... Colin Hanks, Jack Black, lots of other people. You reminded me, I did not have this on the list of possible films we could do, and you reminded me, it's got Chevy Chase and it's got Ben Stiller in it.
It does, yes. This movie is chock-a-block full of talent, because like you said, it's Colin Hanks.
A lot of stars.
Jack Black, yeah. Catherine O'Hara's in it. John
Lithgow.
Lily Tomlin. This is a movie written by Mike White before... School of Rock. This movie came out a year before School of Rock.
Before White Lotus. It's early embryonic Mike White.
And it was directed by Jake Kasdan, who of course did Zero Effect, the last two Jumanji.
Love Zero Effect.
The last two Jumanji movies with Jack Black.
Yeah, okay.
And of course the movie that we referenced earlier in this episode, the great Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story.
Classic.
Look at
classic.
That,
unheralded classic. Yeah.
See that? We brought it all together. Full circle. Yeah. We did.
I did not see this in the theaters. I saw it on video like years later. Well, not video. Well, maybe it was. Yeah. I saw it after its theatrical run, but I was checking it out because I was a fan of Jake Kasdan and all that from Freaks and Geeks and Undeclared and all that. And I was like, oh, I want to check out these other things that Jake Kasdan has done. I bet I would enjoy this film. And I did enjoy this.
Yay. So there we go. So
that's next week. We're going to go back to school with Orange County. But, you know, in the meantime, you know, please support the podcast, rate and review, all that. Check us out on YouTube at non-productive.com.
Yeah. Patreon. Blue Sky.
Helps us keep the podcast going, people.
Blue Sky. You can follow us at SNL Nerds. You could follow Non-Productive at Non-Pro on Blue Sky. And you can follow me, myself, and I, on all the socials at Darren Incredible. That's D-A-R-A-N, Incredible.
And you can follow me on the socials at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L or Comic. And, next week, Orange County. We're going to revisit that for the first time in years and years and years. Going on 20 years, and we'll see how it holds up to us now. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that.
Let's do it.
All right, so join us next week for that. But until then, Nerds Out!
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. executive producer Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Nonproductive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.